I'm Felina Jean, and this is Black Broads Abroad. I'm an international woman of leisure who said peace out to the United States in 2011, and I have not looked back except at this ass, honey. Since then, I've lived on 4 continents with travel to over 40 countries. Along my journey, I've come to know some very compelling Black women from all over the world who also said fuck you to their comfort zones. I created this podcast to inspire Black women in the diaspora to take risks and live their very best lives. Cinnamon is a digital strategist and entrepreneur from Washington, D.C. Soon after her 40th birthday, she decided to leave the United States and move to Lisbon, Portugal for a new life. Cinnamon shares her transition to expat life as well as the experiences of other expats on her YouTube channel. Her goal is to encourage busy professionals to spend more time focusing on their personal goals and aspirations rather than committing to the restrictions and pressures of building someone else's dream. Welcome, Cinnamon.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. So I'll give like a little backstory of how you even came into my orbit. So I met Cinnamon through a past guest, attorney Faye Tillery, and we were on a Blacksit panel, and I found your story and your journey very compelling. So thank you for accepting an invitation and being on my platform.
Absolutely.
But you just culminated a very successful virtual conference for folks who are ruminating about the idea of living overseas. And girls, kudos to you, because I know a lot of planning and tech stuff went on behind the scenes and it went off without a glitch. It was so seamless. I really enjoyed it. So now you're back to life, back to reality in Portugal in this 2020 pandemic. Biden and Kamala just won. And I saw you celebrated with drinks and tapas this week. So how are you doing? How are you feeling in these times?
I feel good. I feel like this is almost reminiscent to when Obama won, except we're coming from a very divided point in our country. Unlike when Obama won, Bush was the president prior, and we didn't have such blatant racism with Bush. So to see it over the past 4 years with the past administration was stressful, as it would be, you know, for, you know, everyone. Every person of color is just looking like, what is happening to this country? And although if you are a person of color, you know that racism has always existed. And it was just seeing it in this level and having an administration that seemed to have supported it was really hard to watch. So even with the election, it was even hard to watch how close it was in.
Were you surprised?
I wasn't surprised. You know what? America. No, surprise is not what I was. I was disappointed.
Yes.
And more importantly, of seeing so many people who would publicly shame him, whether it's friends, colleagues, cohorts. You know, they continue to speak negatively of him. But in order for the numbers to be as close as they were, means people were closeted supporters.
Yeah, more white folks voted for him this time than they did last time, girl.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's it. It look, America didn't change because someone got voted in office. Let's just be clear.
Absolutely.
And interestingly enough, I've had, you know, some other expat friends were talking and saying, you know, now people are just since the election, which wasn't that long ago. A friend of mine in England was saying, you know, people just deciding to go back to the States. And I'm like, in my opinion, I don't want anyone to get hurt for sure, but I prefer to have my racism like out in the open.
Like, me too. Yeah, me too. Me too. I like to know who I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you really hate me because of the pigment in my skin, I'd rather know that this is just what you do up front. And so even though it doesn't necessarily change, the fabric of America, it makes some of it hidden a little bit more hidden than it was in a past administration. So we'll see what that entails. The benefit that we do have is that the past administration, other countries just did not roll with him. And as much as people certain people want to scream America first, America's success is dependent a lot on other countries. Whether you understand that or not, it's a fact. Mm-hmm. So assume financially that every time we get into some financial drama every 7 to 10 years and we need to get bailed out, the country doesn't have the money. We typically will take out, get money from other countries and provide interest, you know, on that money to help bail us out. So the countries that own majority of our debt are China and Japan. And so when you keep screaming this America first mess, but you don't realize America don't own, is in debt. And that it needs other countries to help it. And so when that is the case, you sound ignorant. You sound like you have not gotten any education, and you just really think that America just out here running by itself, and that's just not the case at all.
Yeah, you know, I had to dismantle a friendship. It was like my little brother too. I've known this, my little Morehouse brother, I've known him like 10 years, and he told me last year that him and his family were Trump supporters, girl. It was like, what? I mean, I let it linger and linger, but like, closer to the election, like I can't listen to this drivel and support it any longer. It's like I probably should have known by the crooked hairline. You could always tell race traitors by them jagged edge hairlines, girl. But anyway, I digress. thank you. So that was a really good analysis. So I have a question. Did you leave? When did you leave? Did you leave during Trump's administration or before that?
I left last year in June. What year is it currently? Okay. It's 2020. I left in 2019.
Oh, okay.
So there was me leaving was only a portion of the administration. A small portion of the administration was the reason why I left. I had done extensive travel 3 years prior. And from that, things just didn't make sense anymore to be in America. Mm-hmm. Initially, I thought that I was going to like retire out of the country. But then I had lost like more friends and family who had passed away. And I was like, what am I doing? And you always think, you know, the unfortunate thing is that people always think they have forever or long enough time. And the people who passed away early never thought that their day was going to, you know, be that expiration date, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I don't know if I have 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 decades left on this earth. So let me go. Like, let me get out of here. But more importantly, when you start to travel, you see that all these other countries have things that we don't, like universal health care, education. You know, all these things that their citizens don't have to pay for, and these countries are still operating normally and look great, and the citizens are happy, not working right. Like, it's like, what are we doing this for? Like, it stopped making
what is absolutely bananas that we've all bought into this.
Yep, we were in the matrix. We're in the matrix and didn't know it.
Yeah. So, okay. So take us back. You're originally from DC. What were you doing before embarking upon your expat journey?
Oh gosh. So, I started and I was an entrepreneur at the age of like 21. I started my first company and I worked with at-risk youth, adjudicated youth and special needs students in regards to the various, you know, level 5 schools that were in Washington, DC. And so I provided educational services through my company. And then from that, I had gotten incorporated only because my accountant told me to. I didn't really know what that meant, but I started reading books on corporations and businesses. And I was like, okay, so I have a business. So I went to a mentor and I was just young and dumb, but hungry back then. And so I went to a mentor and I was like, so what do I do now? Like, I have a business, what do I do? And they were educated in doing contracts with the federal government. So they told me, go get your local small disadvantaged business certification, go get this certification, work on your 8A certification. And again, I didn't know what any of these were. I got on the computer, I researched it, and I was like, okay, I'll go apply. Again, not knowing what any of that meant. So I just applied, and then I later learned, okay, based on these various certifications, when there are state contracts or federal contracts, you get points for belonging to a certain group. So if you are in a disadvantaged franchise location,
you get points for that. If you're a woman-owned business, you get points for that. You know, all those different things. So that's what the certifications were for, but I didn't know that at the time. I just did it because he told me to. So after, you know, doing that and reading more books, I was trying to, you know, get into this growth of business and, you know, creating financial independence. And so I started buying real estate and I bought, you know, various properties in Baltimore. I had some rental properties and that type of thing. And then I started to get into trading. I wasn't day trading at the time. So I got into trading and then everything was great, wonderful. And then when 2008 came, you know, the financial
crisis,
just rocked my whole world and I lost absolutely everything. And what was really interesting is like, so I had like, I don't know, like maybe 11 properties. Some were rented and some that I were renovating. And so what I would typically do is I would buy a house, and back in those years, you could buy a house in Baltimore for, you know, super cheap. So I'll buy a house for, you know, a couple thousand dollars, not a couple, but, you know, some thousands of dollars in cash. And then I would renovate it with a home equity line of credit. And so then from there, I will, you know, get a tenant, you know, do that whole thing a couple times. So what was interesting, which I think I heard of back in the day, but it wasn't in my mind. If you do a home equity line of credit, the bank can basically cut the loan, like stop the loan, versus if you do a home equity loan, you get a lump sum up front. The home equity line of credit is more like a credit card against the house. So I was renovating the house and they was like, yeah, we're going to have to cut your credit. And I'm like, why? I've been paying, you know, every month. My credit score is good. Like, what do you mean you stop it? And apparently that was just, you know, something they can do with that type of investment vehicle. So meanwhile, I'm here with properties that are not done. The world is collapsing, but I don't all the way know it yet. And it hasn't really affected my friends and majority yet because people who were in finance or real estate got hit first. So I liquidated my brokerage account to attempt to save real estate that I shouldn't have attempted to, but I, you know, hindsight is 20/20. So basically I lost, you know, everything. And when it happened to me, or when it slowly happened to me, maybe about 7 months later, it was happening to the whole world. And I went into a massive depression. I don't know how many years it was. It probably was more than three, but I couldn't even get out of the bed in some days because I always associated my worth by how much money I made. And so,
oh, girl, I understand. I understand. Yep.
So when I wasn't making any money, I basically felt like I was worthless and I just couldn't get my life together. And then somehow, I'm saying somehow, years later, like, let's not get it twisted. It took like of not doing anything. I usually would go to books to kind of get some type of ideas or inspiration. And I was like, all right, so why don't I write a book that interviews mom entrepreneurs? Because at the time, it was just me. I don't have any kids. But if I did have a child and I lost everything the way that I did, I could not imagine what I would do with myself. Like, I was just so impressed with those mom entrepreneurs that can keep moving forward and they got mouths to feed. Like, if I ain't eat that day, I wasn't going to die. You know what I mean?
Right.
But if I didn't feed a child, I would fall apart. You know what I mean? So I became obsessed with them and I started searching out mom entrepreneurs, not just mama, but ones that had a story, like ones that were like, it was in the gutter and they made it happen. So I did that probably about 18 months and I interviewed some great people. And one of them was actually Paula Deen, which was this, you know, major cook.
I remember Paula Deen.
Right.
I went to her restaurant where them black women was cooking the food and the bad girl. Yeah.
So I interviewed her because I had read her memoirs like years ago and I was really impressed with her story. And so it actually took me 18 months to get her interview. So I followed her around the country until I can actually secure the interview. And I secured the interview. She was super nice to me. And then the book came out and then her controversy came out and I was like, oh shoot.
That's good for book sales, I would think though. No,
I don't know. I don't know. So at any rate, but anyway, I say all that to say that book or me working on that project really made me get my life together because I was hearing and interviewing these women who were just dynamic and their situation was far more dire than mine. And they had a child to feed, you know what I'm saying? And they still made it happen and do it. So I was like, girl, get over yourself. You know what I'm saying? And I decided, well, I figured that everything that I knew how to do prior to me losing everything, like I still had that in my head. I still had the knowledge. I still had the expertise. I just didn't have all this unnecessary shit. Oh, I don't know if I can curse. Sorry. But then.
Yeah, it's fine.
that would tie me down to the country anyway. So it almost feels like it was divine intervention anyway. But so I just started rebuilding. And when it was time for me to rebuild, when I did have, you know, make good money, I didn't go nowhere. I ain't do nothing. I may have went to the Caribbean and a couple parts of South America, but I ain't do nothing. I barely saw my friends. I barely lived a life. And I was like, okay, look, this next role, I'm going to make sure that I will be location independent. So when I kind of thought about what are some of the, you know, jobs or professions I can look into, work regardless of what the economy is doing is marketing. Like every business wants more customers, period.
That right.
is what the industry is. They all want more customers. They all want more revenue. So I had to get educated on what I could do or what I could learn to make businesses increase their revenue. And that was the journey from that point on.
Oh, wow. Okay. So one of the things that I really like is that you took this leap at 40 and you really lined up your ducks, because just to be honest, there's some sisters out here sloppy, and that's not a good look. You don't want to be caught slipping nowhere, much less in a foreign environment. So on the panel that we did on the Blackset conference, one of the topics was having life insurance, medical insurance, retirement savings, all of these adult things, right? Especially if you are of a particular age. So can you talk a bit more or a bit through how you made sure that you had your house in order before taking the leap?
Well, to me, I think a lot of it has to do with knowing where your income is going to come from. I already day traded. So I always did the investment part. I've already kind of knew how to do that. But you don't want to go to a country and not know how you're going to bring money in said country. And so if you can do it in America, you can do it in another country, particularly if you do it in a digital form. So that was the most critical thing for me to know that this amount of monthly income was secured. That's the thing that made me be like, all right, I'm out. And so I know that a lot of people who haven't been entrepreneurs before kind of struggle with this. But again, if we're talking about women at a particular age, you've been doing something. You've got experience from something. You've had a job. You've, you know, probably, a, you know, a career professional. And it's time to understand that those same skills can be transferred digitally, and not just digitally, but globally. There are various countries that could use your expertise that you've just been hoarding for America. And if you don't let people know that you exist or the skill sets that you provide, no one's going to be able to find you. So when setting all those things up, of course, it's going to vary based on what your responsibilities are. So I can speak as a single woman with no kid. So far as like, you know, life insurance and all that other stuff, I don't particularly care about, because, you know, I don't have nobody to, you know, do the legacy with. But of course, health insurance and everything else, you've got to set those types of things up. But I think the most important thing, so that you can de-stress, because moving abroad is stressful when within itself. There's a lot of things that's going to be coming to you brand new that you've never experienced. And it will be, and it can be, it will be overwhelming. And particularly if you're going to a country in which you don't speak the language, which is what I did. I came to Portugal, didn't speak a lick of Portuguese. And so just the immersion in the culture shock of how to operate. I didn't know how to operate the stove, the microwave, the washer. I can't convert Celsius to Fahrenheit, like, you know, grams to, you know, like, it's just all, I'm like, what? And that's already overwhelming. But if you're going to leave and be on some adult stuff, you got to know at least your options to position yourself for income. Everything else you can probably, you know, figure it out, but you need to know how you're going to make some money and really understand. And you said this, you know, at my summit, this geo arbitrage is no joke. Like, it is no joke. I picked a country that basically all the money I make in the US is 20% is lost, convert into a euro. And
right,
that hurts you in your soul every time you see it.
Yeah.
It hurts me in my soul every time I see it. But then with seeing that, again, with this moving abroad, you got to adapt. You got to learn how to adapt, and you got to learn how to adapt quickly. So I immediately was like, okay, I got to stop making USD. I got to make euros. And so I sent out, you know.
That part.
Yes. That I sent part. Out information to my clients. I was like, come January 1, all of your, you know, I'm not going to increase my prices, but it will be converted to euros. And you can, you know, if you decide you want to continue to work with me, that's fine. If not, I can refer some other people to you that are located in the US. And then of course I've decided to create other digital products that will be charged in euros, because the thing about this currency, which fascinates me that most people don't notice, currency is ongoing. It changes all the time. So when I first came here to Portugal last year, it was $1.11. And then when I flew back here a couple months ago, it was up to 1.18. And then last month it went up to 1.19. And so that was my other concern about the administration, because other countries are just not messing with America right now. And right. So he would have won. I was concerned that the euro would increase in even more value and the USD would decrease and that I would be screwed. So there's still no guarantee that that's going to happen or not happen. But those are the type of things you have to consider when, you know, in life in general, you know what I'm saying? Like your administration has a lot to do with how valuable your money is in other countries. And if you keep screaming this America first, if we America first, why is our currency lower than Europe?
Right, that part.
Let's be real and humble and just realize that, you know, there's certain things you have to do to adjust. So now that I knew that my life was going to be in euros, I got to make euros. And so I have to, you know, increase my marketing and do what I have to do to look like a leader in my industry so that people will care more about working with me than they do about my pricing. And
right,
that's what it is.
I love that. So fitness is certainly a part of your lifestyle. Like you got body for days. What is your regimen and how has living in Lisbon supported you in maintaining a healthy lifestyle?
80% of it is food, period. And when I was in the States, which is one of the reasons what made me want to move, like the United States will just put anything in your food. Like it don't even have to be edible.
Absolutely.
They will just put some in your food. If it will preserve it for an extra 50 billion years, they will put it in your food. And even the fact that our Food and Drug Administration is the same thing is bananas.
Like, I never even thought about that.
It's bananas. Wow. How the hell are you going to regulate my food and my drugs? Like, what?
I never thought about that. Because they putting the drugs in the food. So.
Listen. So it's been known. And what I did know about Europe is they just don't allow the things that the United States allows in their food. So that was just first up. So when it came to what country I was moved to, Europe, like this is what that's going to be. And so countries that you pay for, that the healthcare is free, they protect their citizens in regards to what's going into the food because they know ultimately the government will be paying for the healthcare. So it is to their advantage to make sure you have access to good food. So, and the problem is in America, in order for me to have access to good food, I got to pay three times more. I got to pay more money for you to give me food that has less ingredients than you giving me food that has processed ingredients. That is ridiculous.
Girl, yeah, you know, one of my times re-entering into the U. I've been gone 10 years, but I've gone back for a few months twice in those 10 years. I think it was like 2012. I ran out of everything, alimony, savings, everything, right. I was in a farmer's market. And it was avocados and they were like $2 for $5. I started bawling. I was bawling. Like I was in Brazil just probably like 6 months prior. My produce for the week was probably like $10.
Yep.
For all of it. So yeah.
Like that a pepper. I remember red pepper being $3. A red pepper in the United States in Washington, D.C. was $3.
It's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous.
And you do, you eat other stuff when you get a pepper. It's not like you just be out here just eating peppers to the face. You usually are putting it into a dish. So peppers now you got to buy, you usually gotta buy more to accommodate the pepper.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's crazy. And you actually taste the difference. You actually taste the difference.
Absolutely.
When you go back, it's like your palate has changed. And it's like, ooh, you kind of taste the chemicals and shit in the food.
Yes. And the thing that is that Americans don't understand is, like, we don't really have farmers to the way that we used to. Our food, most of the time, especially if we're talking about produce, didn't even come from our country. So you have to buy, you can't even pick stuff when it's super, super ripe because you have to compensate for travel time. So if we getting, you know, pineapples from, you know, or getting anything from Venezuela and they're going to put it on a boat, you can't pick that. It's prime time. I got to be on a boat for transportation. And then it goes to California first and then it goes to the rest of America. And if you live in the Midwest, like, good luck. We don't even know what kind of produce you eating up.
Right? Oh, wow.
So you can't even get the full nutrients of the food you're supposed to get because it wasn't even picked at its peak. And in other countries, a lot of times they either grow the food or they grow it at a very close country that's neighboring them. You know, a lot of, like, even in Europe, like, going across to another country is very quick and easy. It's short. It's not like, you know, how we get majority of our products from China and it's got to be on a plane. Right. It's like, come on, US.
They got to do better. So what was it about Lisbon specifically that you decided, okay, this is it. This is where I'm going to live.
It was, well, the research came initially about the food thing that we were talking about, like food being fresh and healthy was important to me. And I knew that was going to be a European country. And so I know a lot of European countries can be kind of as expensive as certain parts of the United States. So if I was going to move, I definitely didn't want to, I wanted to lower my expenses instead of increase them. So when I just did a regular Google search, it was, I would maybe have typed affordable cities or cheap cities in Europe. And of course, the same search everybody's been doing to think that Portugal is the hot spot. So that's kind of how I got caught up in the matrix as well. And, you know, I had decided that I was going to move. Did I decide I was going to move to Portugal before I visited, or did I was going to move out the country? I think I decided that I was going to move to Portugal as long as they weren't, as long as I didn't experience any harsh racism. Then I was going to move to Portugal because I was like, I'm moving out this country, even if it's for a year, but I'm going to do it. And so I've had very bad experiences in Spain. Like every time I go to Spain, I got to deal with some racial drama. So I was concerned that Portugal was going to, I was going to have the same energy as I did in Spain because they're so close. But the cultures are completely different. I mean, I came here, everyone was loving and caring and food was great. And I was just like, all right, I'm out. I'm out.
Wow. I love it. I've never been to Portugal, but I've interviewed, another, I don't know if you know Cha. Do you know Cha?
Mm-hmm,
I interviewed her first season. It seems like a destination for a lot of Black people right now. Have you been seeing? I was looking at everybody that's going to Mexico right now, honey. Mexico look like Atlanta right now.
Like, well, I mean, yeah, I've interviewed some folks from Mexico. And I think the important thing is that, like, there's just people who were just like over the United States. And Mexico with COVID was the only country that was allowing people to come in, basically. Not to mention, again, as far as, like, you know, geo arbitrage, you can, you know, definitely do more in Mexico, especially in comparison to Europe.
Sure. And it's a 6-month visa.
Right. So there's a lot of, I think it's a good option, if particularly if you're still trying to decide if this move abroad thing is for you. It's a good transition point for me, or stay there forever. I don't care. I don't know you, but, you know, Mexico is an option for people. But I think, you know, like you said, often I hear your voice when I had to pay my rent this month, November 1st, and I transferred money from the U.S. to my Portuguese account to pay my rent. And I literally heard your voice when you was like, this geo arbitrage, because saw that money decrease so substantially when it got to Portugal. That joy hurt me in my So,
yeah, I know. See, my GeoArbitrage setup different than yours, though.
Yours is better.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yours is definitely better.
I don't know. It went
better.
Up to like, it when the pandemic first hit, before it hit, it was like 1 to 14.9 or something like that. Then it went all the way up to like 17 something. Whoa. I don't know where it is right now. It's probably more steady. I need to check. But yeah, so GeoArbitrage works in both ways.
Oh yeah. Oh
yeah. Works in both ways. So you've created a business helping busy professionals spend more time focusing on their personal goals and aspirations. How did you get started doing this? And what are some of the services that you offer?
So here's the thing. This was an accident. It actually came from more of this transition that I'm making, because more women professionals were reaching out to me like, oh, I want to do this and that type of thing. So really part of the Moving Abroad Summit came from just all the insight and information that I was getting. And that's what made me realize that it needed to be done. Now, when I did the summit, there were certain private classes that people could sign up for. And one of them was, you know, the one I taught was creating multiple sources of income for your business. And the other one is like how to establish a business for location independent life. And so when I'm talking to these various women, they're, you know, all professionals, college educated, smart. I thought people just needed the tools. I thought you just needed to know what software you needed and how to set up your funnels and stuff like that. And it was like, nah, it was a complete mindset that needed to be changed. Like I had someone tell me that, you know, well, what if I don't have a skill? I'm like, shorty, you are like 41.
Everybody has a skill.
You go to work every day. Do you think you just sitting there looking at the wall? Like, no, you are incorporating the skills that you have. And it was just a lot of people assuming, again, like I did, that my worth was based on some, you know, the money I made, or in their case, a company. And I didn't know that because I haven't been very corporate, you know, focused, a part of corporate America during my, you know, adult life to understand those pressures per se. So when people would say things, I was like, wait a minute, I don't think I understand. Are you associating that you can't do this because a job is not doing this, it's not giving you a position to do it? And I had no idea. So then it was like, all
yeah,
right.
You were an entrepreneur very early.
But it was on accident. It was on accident.
That's like, you should be lauded for that. A lot of people are not. I wasn't comfortable with taking the leap until I was about 34, full time. Yeah, it's still a scary place for me. I'm gonna have to talk to you offline, girl.
It is. I think it's just the way that I'm wired, that like, I don't play well with others. I'm have a very independent spirit, and I don't.
Are you an only child?
I'm not an only child, but me and my siblings weren't raised together per se. I think me and my older sister, we spent the most amount of time, but that was probably maybe 6 years out of our lives. So from my mom and my dad, all my siblings are half. So we weren't all the way raised with each other. So, and I'm Aquarius. So I got like an independent spirit. I'm always out here doing something. So part of it is just the way that I'm wired.
It certainly is a feature that is conducive with living abroad.
Yeah. It definitely has a positive byproduct with that part. But what I want people to understand is that a lot of times you don't have to pay as much to live abroad as you do in the States. So like in the States, if you have a car, like good luck. If you got, and then you got to pay insurance on the car and health insurance and the amount of food. Like, so the amount of money you pay in the United States to just live. And if you have a kid, like, I don't even know how people have kids and cars in the same household. Like, I don't know how y'all do it.
I know.
Like,
I know.
So when you move to another country, you know, a lot of times your healthcare is free, or like I pay for private healthcare. I'm paying €8 a month. Or your food is, your food cost is dramatically decreased. So when it comes to like securing clients, you don't need as many to live. So many of you all are in a situation where you work for a company and your company's success is due to you. A lot of the clients would leave if you left. So you just need to start, you know, start your plan. You know what I'm saying? Just if you're going to make this transition, you may only need three clients to live, you know, your $1,500 to $2,000 lifestyle in a whole nother country. And that just depends on what the currency is. If you're going to a place with, you know, a higher, the US dollar is higher, you don't even need to have all that. So
yeah, it definitely depends on the kind of lifestyle. But one of my, I hate to cut you off, but, but on that subject, one of my, I'm so happy, one of my homegirls, I've known her for 30 years. She's been living in Ghana. But anyway, she's moving here. And so I'm like helping her find a place and stuff. And, you know, she gave me her budget. Like she could legit, she has two kids. She could legit live in South Africa. Well, you know, in a nice middle-class suburb, for like $1,200 a month.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So, you know, like this geo arbitrage goes.
Right.
It go both ways, but it's doable. I think the point is that it's doable on almost any budget and being able to monetize your skill set, because we all have a skill set.
Absolutely. I don't know why, especially Black women, like
we do everything.
Much.
Shit.
Like, how are you out here thinking that you don't have a skill? Like, when I heard someone say that, it actually broke my heart. I was like, honey, you're not out here thinking that that the only like value you provide is what a job told you to do. Like, you come on, we better than that.
Yeah. Oh, so you like a life coach and career coach?
I'm not nobody's life coach. I am no one's life coach. I don't profess to be. I don't even sometimes take it seriously. But I think I don't know. Like it's the unfortunate thing of how our self-esteem affects us, and it affects me too. You know, like just certain things, like. The thing of just having a team, and when I had to do the Moving Abroad Summit, most of the time I'm like a solo entrepreneur. I'll grab people for different projects. But for this Moving Abroad Summit, I could not do it by myself. There was no way in hell. And so I had two other people that would support me. And all of us are independent entrepreneurs, like solo entrepreneurs. So when we had to come together, we realized we were so much more productive and able to like really knock stuff out in a way that we had not done in our whole career. Like one of them, I've known her for 20 years. And she was like, yo, I've been missing out on being able to accomplish things because I just didn't have this team. Like the team in my business is I am hierarchy and I'm hiring people to do things that I need them to do. But I didn't have a team of people or other entrepreneurs that could help me not work in my business, but work on my business until like, hell, 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
And that makes a big damn difference for a whole bunch of reasons. So I'm gonna tell you something. That damn Moving Abroad Summit, I wanted to quit so many times. I was like, look, let me just cancel it, refund people their money and be out because I can't. And it was those other two people that were like, nah, we good. We got this. And we continued to encourage each other over the course because not everybody was strong every day. You know what I mean? So luckily, the other two. And it just made me realize that I've been missing this my whole entrepreneurship career because as a solo entrepreneur, it's so easy for you to procrastinate and not do what you need for the success.
Girl, this is why I've been on sabbatical for far too long. Because it's just me and me. and sometimes the talent I outsource, but it's, yeah.
And then right. If you don't do it, you don't die. Nothing, you know what I'm saying? Nothing massive happens at that moment. So it's really easy to procrastinate. But when you got other people counting on you, you don't want to go and look like irresponsible to someone else. It's more important to me to not look irresponsible than it is for me to do what I need to do for myself. It's ridiculous, but it's true.
Hey, whatever. No, I mean, accountability is important, though.
Yeah.
That's important. Yeah. Ooh, girl, that was a moment. I think I need that. So
The team is necessary.
It is. It's so difficult to find a good team sometimes. That's been my biggest, that's been the bane of my existence actually as an entrepreneur.
I agree. And I think now that I look at things like more on a global perspective, because even the people that I've, you know, been interviewing and meeting you and that type of thing, you kind of see the women who have made this jump are wired a certain way. They don't need people to handhold them and tell them, well, what about this? And what if they, you know, they see an opportunity, they go and jump. And that's right. really all you need from the beginning. You know what I'm saying? So I think, you know, in the process of meeting all these dynamic women, you start, A, you feel people's energy, because that's a real ass thing.
Oh, yes, it is.
And you know, you have these conversations and see how your skill set can help benefit the person and the people. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I'm in the process of, just trying to have more conversations like this and start to get more educated on everybody's skill set, because people who out here made this jump, like, they are dynamic as hell. Like, they smart as hell. You know, they're go-getters. And that's really the biggest issue of finding a good team, because most people claim they want the success, but they're not going to work for it. They want you to handhold them and give them a guided, you know, process and path. But that's not how life is. Like, things are going to pop up, and there's not going to be a Google search or a brochure to tell you how to get out of it. You got to problem solve. And so when people who made this jump, they learned how to problem solve. You can't live in another country and not know how to, or you're going to be back home in a year, 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, that's another thing. I think, living abroad for all of these years, it actually prepared me for entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm, just mm-hmm. being able to pivot, especially in like a global environment, right? It's like, right. even, yeah, I picked up a skill set just by default of moving abroad. Mm-hmm. So that's the moral of the story, is we all have skill sets, Black women, that can be monetized. Okay. That's the moral of that story. So what's the biggest lesson that you've learned about stepping outside of your comfort zone?
Oh, wow. So I was having this conversation with someone the other day. When I was back in DC, my life, I could probably tell you what my life would look like every single weekend, every single Monday, every single Friday, every single day. It didn't vary that much. I had the same, you know, friends. I had the same, you know, men that I would probably recycle over the course of 20 years. And nothing... Nothing changed. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was nothing major. If you know, if someone's birthday, we probably go into the same restaurant, maybe a new restaurant that we heard open. But my life was pretty much the same. When I left, my life changed so much in 1 year than it had changed in 20 years.
Wow. And
just the excitement and fear and all of that surrounds that, just the ability now to be creative. Like, I didn't have the ability to be creative before, because I was so busy worried about paying all the expenses that I had and the life that I was living, and, you know, trying to be a supportive friend and trying to be, you know, a fake girlfriend, whatever the hell. So just like so many other responsibilities. But now, like, it's just me. My cost of living is substantially low. I can go and look at the way certain things may run in the country or in an office or whatever and say, huh, maybe my expertise can be lended here and help this business do whatever. And those things start to happen naturally. And as we talked about that energy stuff, you'll be out in the streets and some serendipitous things will just happen.
Yes.
And you go with it, and it just opens you up to all these other opportunities. You know what I'm saying? So it's just been, if I would have stayed home, my life would have been the same way it was for the past 20 years. So that's the biggest aha moment I've had. Like, I'm able to be in a one bedroom apartment that overlooks the water for 750 euros a month. Like, that is not
crazy. That's just crazy.
It's not a thing. Like, how? And if I would have stayed, I wouldn't have never even known that this was possible. So this is the caveat I do want to say to anyone who's listening, because I get these type of people who come to me and they hear the glamorous part and they're like, oh my God, I want to go do that. But I need everyone to do your due diligence. And it is a little bit more than just researching online, because no one, including myself, and I'm sure it even include Felina, can tell you everything you need, everything you're going to experience. You just got to be okay with being uncomfortable. And if you know you struggle with that, you don't need to watch the YouTube videos. You don't need to do the research, because you're not going to take that jump. You're not going to do it. You're just wasting a lot of time that you could use to focus on, you know, something else you're more comfortable with. But that move is not for you. Moving abroad is not for everybody.
For everybody.
Don't get caught up. Yes, don't get caught up in the system and the hype. It is not for everybody. I personally, I felt uncomfortable throughout my whole life. And it's not that I feel comfortable with it, but I will work through fear. Even if I'm scared, I will still do something. If that is not you, don't worry about it. It's okay. Just do something that's much more comfortable. Don't think that you need to be moving abroad.
Yeah, it's not for everybody. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. And then it's also like, it's nothing like what you see influencers posting online. That's not, they're not the same thing. Like living abroad and going on a vacation are two completely different things.
And then staying abroad. Like some people just think you just need to be done. Like you may need visas. You may need to deal with I'm working with a government that doesn't, I don't know their native language. You know what I'm saying? So even on my channel, I know people probably think I'm a jerk. They'll ask me these very general questions. And I'm like, sweetheart, if you can't figure that out right now in your home country, you can't come here. You can't. Because you are going to struggle. Yeah. When you come to a country, you got to do everything to stay legal in said country. And it's not in your language and you can't figure it out. Who you feel like you're going to call?
Yeah.
You got to be real with yourself, people. Ladies and gentlemen, be real with yourself.
Yeah. And there's, I've done other episodes on this, but there's also all kinds of different ways to do it. Like,
absolutely.
People who might require, like, they're not embarking upon their journey as an entrepreneur. If you're recruited with a company, then you have, it's a lot more hand holding. They facilitate your banking and your housing. And,
even if you're a student, it's a lot easier.
It's a lot easier. Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I learned real quick. Like this, I've been expat 10 years, but last year was my first time doing it, like living in a country and I wasn't recruited. Mm-hmm. Well, I wasn't recruited in Brazil, but I planned to be here long term. I had to figure out everything on my own. This is the real immigrant experience because this is a distinct difference
and
between
no
being
joke.
An expat and being an immigrant. Okay.
Yes,
and
sure.
So I got the full immigrant experience this time around.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have? I guess you've kind of answered this, but I mean, if you have more to offer, what advice do you have for Black women that are thinking about joining this Black Bras Abroad expat community?
Develop a community. I feel like that is the most important thing because when you come out here, like I'm an introvert and I can be in my house for weeks and not see people and be perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, me too.
And I thought that would easily transition in another country. Like I'm like, okay, I can lower my expenses, be in another country. I'm an introvert, blah, blah. But you will feel super isolated. And if you just don't have anyone to talk to, it can be rough. Not can be. It is rough. I feel like when I first came here, I cried every single night for like a week straight because I didn't speak the language. Like I straight had a breakdown in the Sheraton in Saldanha, Portugal. And I FaceTimed my best friend. And I was like, what am I doing? Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I went to the Sheraton because I knew, it was American branding, had to speak English. And I was just walking around the streets. I didn't understand what people say. And I knew that would potentially be the case, but it just felt so isolating. And then you have this buyer's remorse. We're like, did I make the right move? What have I done? Mm-hmm. And then I started to meet people. And at 40, I didn't even know if I knew how to make new friends. You know what I'm saying? Most of the friends I had for like 20 years.
That's a word. That's a word. Because I was just having this conversation, like at a particular age, I just don't have a whole lot of bandwidth to be making new friends. So yeah, I get it.
So you gotta learn how to do that all over again, and that's why that energy part is so interesting, because when you are in the environment that you've been in forever, your intuition gets super quiet. Like it's not as quiet. I mean, it's not as loud as it used to be because you have so many other things that are in the forefront of your brain that you kind of silence it a bit. But when you go to a different environment, she's on 1,000. Like she is yelling at you because you're forced to rely on your intuition because you don't know a lot.
Yeah.
And that's where that energy comes in, and you'll meet people and you'll feel it. Like for most of the expats I talked to, they're like, it may be a situation that didn't feel right and they immediately left, they talked to a stranger and that kind of turned into something else. Like you'll keep hearing these stories of just randomness that people were just attracted or not attracted just by people's energy.
Girl. Yeah. yeah, it's gotten me into some of the best situations mm-hmm. that just happened serendipitously and gotten me mm-hmm. out mm-hmm. the way, all mm-hmm. the way out the way. You have, mm-hmm. you know, this wasn't actually one of my pre-slated questions, but have you ever been mistaken for a prostitute?
I may not have known that. It's possible. It definitely could have happened, and I just didn't know because I didn't know what they were saying. But as far as I know,
having this conversation too. Yeah, I'm like, you know, I'm not. I don't carry myself in like, you know, a kind of vulgar way. You know, I've been mistaken for a prostitute all over the world. As a Black woman.
Well, I think, I feel like part of that, yeah, part of that is a thing. It's a real thing in various countries. You know what I mean? And so there's that. And then if, you know, I mean, even for like makeup in Portugal, like most people aren't wearing like red lipstick and, you know, stuff that I would rock back in the States all the time. Like, I don't remember the last time I put on mascara. Like, I'm put on makeup for like a summit. And then other than that, like, I'm out here in these streets looking like, you know, a teenage boy. So
no, you did it.
so but when I, you know, and that's almost because I got, you know, kind of relaxed. But I think sometimes when we're a little bit more decorated than mm-hmm. Locals, it may, you know, and then there's certain
that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. Kinda,
definitely kind of do that. So yeah.
Yeah, I was like, damn, y'all think I'm a hoe? Shit. I need to check
my energy.
I'm sure
it's nothing personal, hon. It has more to do with the culture and the location than it does with you. Trust.
So what's next for Cinnamon? And where can people keep up with your journey on social media?
So what's next for me? I was actually just writing that list out this morning. So people can find me on drivenspice.com. That's DRIVENSPIC.com. And you can use that same handle on Instagram and YouTube. But right now, I think I'm just in the process of just trying to give more information to people who want it. And then focusing more on kind of building my digital side of this particular business, because I didn't anticipate this to be a business. I literally went on YouTube and was just sharing my journey of moving to Portugal, and it morphed into basically a business. So I have to structure it and create some things to kind of make things more autopilot and more structured that I didn't anticipate doing. But when I did leave, I knew that I wanted to stop building everyone else's brand and spend at least a year or year and a half building my personal brand. And just, you know, for entrepreneurs, it's like building your personal brand is critical, because if you're in a situation where your customers aren't paying your prices, like you go back and forth and they, you know, trying to nickel and dime you, it's because you didn't build your brand and your perceived value. Because when you do that, people search you out and they'll pay what
your prices, right?
Yeah, period. Yeah. If they want to work with you, that's what they got to pay. But when you are sitting there working with these customers that's trying to, you know, nickel and dime you, that means you just didn't show your primary audience that they need to work with you and how much it's going to cost. So I know that to be a fact, and I've done like a half-ass job with that. So I, you know, just various things I want to work on in my business. And it's so new because it was an accident. Like if I had planned it, I would have kind of already put these things into place. But because I didn't plan it, I'm up here like piecemealing, you know, various, you know, aspect of things. But really the whole goal is just to show people you can do, whether you're moving abroad or not, like you can't assume that a job is going to give you your security or the life you want. Like, why would it? You know, when they pay you in America, they take your life. Like you can barely travel. You barely spend time with your spouse or your girlfriend or your boy. Like
you get a 1 week vacation.
Yeah. You suffer.
52 weeks of work. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. So you gotta do it. You gotta do it yourself. And with this digital economy, like hopefully we'll move more to this individualized economy. And people will know that and kind of consider that as their career choice, because if you consider your work on a global level versus just a state level or just, you know, a country level, you can make a good amount of money. I mean, you can contract yourself and freelance yourself all across the world. Like it is the internet and there's websites and there's way of charging people online. So just open your mind to understand that the only limitation you have is the ones you're putting on yourself. And if you just need to find the tools, that's easy to find online, but you got to control your mindset and know that it's possible. Can't nobody do that for you.
Yeah. Amen. Thank you so much, Cinnamon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having
me. This was a lot of game. I'm sure that the audience will appreciate this.
Shout out to our Patreon members for your support. If you too are interested in joining the Black Broads Abroad movement, you can follow us on social media, and that's BLACKBROADS. That's on Instagram and Facebook. And if you'd like to become a supporter on Patreon, you can do so on patreon.com/blackbroadsabroad.